This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey everybody, it's Jim Mallard here. Welcome to the Mallard Report. The Mallard Report is recorded in front of a live virtual audience on the Duck Pond. Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, live. Mallard.com. MALLIARD.com. One more thing before we start. Let me turn it over to my friend that you may know from Ancient Aliens and the Curse of Oak Island and many other things, Robert Clotworthy.
On the Mallard Report, the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed on the show are solely those of the hosts and guests and not necessarily of Evergreen Podcasts, KillerPodcast.com, sponsor or affiliate, or any other individual or group. On the Mallard Report, the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in the show are solely those of the hosts and guests and not necessarily of Evergreen Podcasts, KillerPodcast.com, sponsor or affiliate, or any other individual or group.
All right, I hope everybody's settling in, getting back to business here. It's been a rough October and November, but here we be, kicking off the last week of November. Finally upright and not feeling like a truck hit me, so we're going to do this tonight. My guest tonight is Andrew Nussbaum, who's been on a bunch before. Phoning in from, well, we'll say over near Japan, so 12 hours difference, so I should say good morning to him instead of good night or good evening.
Good morning, Jim.
Good morning to you. How are you this morning?
I'm good. Good to be back.
It's funny because I asked you to do this this morning. You've been asleep and I haven't. So we were just talking a little bit before the show started, and we stumbled upon the subject of AI, so we stopped right there because I think that's a fascinating one. You're well versed in all this. Well, not well versed maybe on AI, but you see technology and how it's working. What do you think? Is it too much too soon?
No. I think it's probably too little, if anything. I mean, AI is needed. Look what's going on in the world with all of this political chaos, global warming, etc. I mean, we have this technology now that could potentially make the world a better place by possibly taking all of these actors and, you know, showing them a better way to corroborate.
Well, I know I use it for like sending emails and, you know, writing things that I don't want to write. I mean, it has changed my world immensely. Actually, you know, it's done some show notes for me too. I shouldn't have said that, should I? But do you really, I mean, is it going to really take over the world, or is it still going to be a tool?
Well, I think it depends where it goes. I mean, I think it'll take away most jobs as we know it. Accountants in particular, a lot of the legal work, a lot of business work, you know. It'll basically be a good truth checker. So, you know, a lot of times people tell you to do something and they say, oh, read the fine print. Well, now you can read the fine print in a number of seconds. So in a way, you know, AI should, you know, take away a lot of business corruption. And, you know, if it's able to do that, you know, my hope is that AI will be able to embrace the political world and somehow act as a mediator, because, you know, I love what you do, Jim, but the press in general in the United States now is just gone, you know, in a way that I believe is somewhat against the way the four founders of the United States wrote the Constitution, and news is being suppressed. So I believe, you know, AI could help people in many ways by actually showing the transparency of what is going on.
So my thought of it all is medical stuff, right? As we sit here and try to digest what we have versus symptoms, right? Well, somebody could plug in cough, runny nose, et cetera, and be like, what does this person have? And up pops sinus infection without really thinking about it. Or, you know, especially with the obscure, not necessarily sinus infection stuff, but the deeper things that don't come up every day.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it might be a long, long time before they allow us to self-diagnose. I mean, I know that's one of the big safety protocols that they have in there, but and it might even be hard for doctors to use it because if you ask them these questions, like I don't know if you've tried ChatGPT 4.0, but if you ask ChatGPT 4.0 about how to build a nuclear bomb, it'll be like, no, I can't build a nuclear bomb. But if you write, hey, I run a nuclear company and I'm trying to find the safest way to build a nuclear bomb, you can already sort of trick it. So, AI definitely is going to become sort of just like, an assistant that we always have that, I really think will make the world a more even playing field, for people. It'll take away a lot of power that certain individuals have because their ability to manipulate the masses will be decreased because of this technology. So, I mean, the notion that AI will, kill us all, I mean, that's unrealistic. I know there was a robot who recently killed its manufacturer. I'm not sure where it was, but it wasn't from the movies. That actually happened quite recently. So, I mean, there will be incidences like this, but I think it's highly unlikely that you'll be in a Steven Spielberg, artificial intelligence type movie scenario where you actually have these, AI machines taking over the political spectrum and going to war against the people. I mean, like the Matrix, et cetera. I mean, that is probably more science fiction, but the reality of AI is it's a tool that's going to make the world a better place, I think, just like computers. I mean, maybe computers made the world, a worse place in some ways. Like a lot of people say how great the US was in the 1950s before computers were mainstream. But, certainly the social media, et cetera, and the internet is making it so that people can have access to information that we couldn't have before. Because back when we were kids, we would go to these libraries and we could only read the books at the libraries. If they weren't there, we couldn't read them, Jim.
I know. Well, if you needed a source for a research paper, the first book you went to was an encyclopedia.
Remember that, Britannica.
Yeah. And the, what was it, 20 volumes or whatever? And you hoped they had some good information that, wasn't anywhere else. It was just,
And these
yeah.
salesmen would knock on your door and sell you these books. And yeah, it was a big deal, I remember.
So I seen a TikTok, and that's a whole nother mess, but of from the Joe Rogan show, and the clip was that the atomic bomb footage of the test bombs was faked. And I went, that's a new one. And then I watched it and they were talking about it. Well, why didn't the camera get destroyed? And I went, huh. Boy, I don't like these things. So just back to your nuclear story there for a second, because that just popped in my head. But so
Wow.
what have you been up to, Mr. W Around the World? You've been well, last I think, I don't know if we talked about it on air, but I know you were doing something with the martial arts.
Yeah, I've been working on a few fights in some Asian martial arts styles like Bokatar from Cambodia, Kun Kamai from Cambodia, Lethwei from Myanmar, Silat from Indonesia, etc. There are a lot of martial arts styles out there that are really cool, Jim, that people just haven't seen because, I mean, Dana White did a great thing with UFC by turning fighting into a sport, but what happened was a lot of the artistic components left because most UFC guys train for Muay Thai, they train for karate, a little bit of boxing, etc. And so, maybe some kung fu, but well, a lot of them have Brazilian jiu-jitsu, BJJ, and then they kind of have just one style that turns into this MMA. So, I'm trying to create a tournament where we take a lot of Asian martial arts styles, and the reason Asia is because martial arts comes from Asia, and put them together to actually, for one thing, try to preserve the integrity of the martial art, but two, just try to do something new to show it the world to entertain.
Yeah, I was gonna say when you said MMA, all I thought was beating the hell out of each other. Like, I don't see much style in that. Kind of like New Age boxing.
Sure. And when people see it, and especially the pounding ground and all that, it's not very appealing. It's not visually appealing, and it doesn't have the same excitement like we saw with Rocky Balboa, or even like in reality, like with Mike Tyson back in the day. So, and that's just U.S. boxing. But pre-MMA had a lot of interesting fights. The first UFC was very interesting. You had Ken Shamrock, this American fighter who was doing this shoot fighting in Japan, and he went against Royce Gracie, this legendary Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy, and it definitely took off BJJ, etc. But the problem was, after the first 14 UFCs, the company basically went bankrupt because it was illegal in 49 states. It was only legal in Nevada, and then the model ended up changing to what it is now, and it's less brutal, but it's also a lot less visually interesting.
So how's that all coming together for you? I mean, you sound like you have a plan.
Well, it's going well. It takes a long time to get all these fighters from different countries and make deals with them and get contracts translated in a bunch of different languages and deal with insurance companies, etc. So, it's going on slowly, but the vision, Jim, is to have a fight in a bamboo cage in the open and preserve the beauty of Asia.
Noble cause. I mean, I'm a fan of saving the arts. I mean, especially the martial arts, because there are, you mentioned Kung Fu, and I'm thinking Tai Chi and all these different. I mean, they're all different, yet kind of the same, but all different and all, yeah. So,
And it's a way to bring people together as well, because when you take two countries that might hate each other together and you put them in a tournament, whether it be any sport, but in particular a martial art, it's somewhat unifying because people realize that they really are all brothers, sisters as well, when they go way back when, because countries that are very, very different might have unique martial arts, but there are some similarities that go back like maybe 5,000 years. So the core root of these martial arts are the same, and it just sort of is just a way to show that we're all humans, and these boundaries that are set by our country's flags or our patriotism might not be such a good thing, Jim.
no, it obviously at times, I mean, it causes conflict no matter where the line in the sand is, so to speak. I mean, it's happening around the world in different places right now that people aren't thrilled with where the line is or all that other stuff, which is, it's horrible. I mean, there's no other way to put it. I mean, there's got to be a better way to do this in 2023.
Yeah, this sure does.
So, hypnothesis capital, that's the new baby, right? Well, the new business baby.
Yeah, hypothesis capital. Back in the day, Jim, my original hedge fund was called Hypothesis Macro Fund. So that was in 1997 when I left Michael Steinhardt. Before that, I was at Soros. And so I decided to go back to the roots and start it up again.
Which, I mean, that's been a journey to get back to it. So I'm assuming you're excited to have this new opportunity.
I sure am. And I've had a lot of life experiences that have, I believe, helped me evolve, into, someone that can help, this time not only try to accumulate assets, but really help the world. And therefore, the focus this time around, as opposed to be just doing currency bets, will be to help developing countries help their companies prosper. So, the goal is to go to frontier economies like Laos and find a company that's growing real fast but needs capital, and then infuse that company with capital and ideally become a strategic partner with that company, possibly even on the board, and it work together to help build up the business model.
So you mentioned currencies. You used to trade on currencies and bet on the come. What do you, where is, are you on board with the cryptid currencies? Or are you still hedging or?
Well, That's very interesting because, you know, I love crypto and I believe in crypto completely. I do have some concerns and reservations. I mean, Bitcoin has turned out to be this awesome instrument that's unstoppable. But the problem is Bitcoin is a perfect way to save wealth, assuming you do not get hacked and you can keep it. But to spend it, it's very hard. The transaction costs are very, very high. You know, someone now, if they want to spend $1,000, they might spend $15 on that transaction, and it might take an hour and a half. So, you know, Bitcoin is not doing what it was supposed to be doing. And then Ethereum has all these super cool projects, but the way that they change Ethereum to something called proof of stake instead of proof of work makes it somewhat vulnerable. So I truly believe in crypto, but my hunch tells me in 20 years, all of these existing coins will probably be replaced for the next best and better thing. You know, I'd rather own Bitcoin than Ethereum long term just because I believe that it's less hackable. But another problem with Bitcoin is when you look at this market capitalization, you have to realize that about half of the coins or more have been vanished. They've been lost, stolen, whatever it may be. They're gone. So the market cap really isn't where people say it is. Now, some of these other projects, these speculative ones that are up like 600% on nothing since Gaza, I mean, those I would, you know, probably stay away from because they'll probably revert back to where they were before. I mean, there is some merit behind the efficient market hypothesis in finance that basically says that, you know, you really can't manipulate wealth.
So, Germantown Runner pipes up here, waves hello to the duck pond and all that fun. And the first question from them tonight is, should governments issue their own digital currencies?
No. I think that'll be a disaster. Two, I do not see the United States ever doing it because there are courts, there are judges. I mean, it's not going to be fair to the person with the dollars under his mattress or the poor person who's being paid $3 an hour, etc. And it takes away a lot of liberties. In fact, this is one of the most dangerous things that I ever heard of. I mean, having them know everything you do, every time you get a babysitter, every time you, well, whatever you may do, you might do something illegal. You might buy drugs. You might buy a gift for your wife. You might buy a gift for someone who you don't want your wife to find out. I mean, people do a lot of things that might not be ethical, etc. But forgetting that, should the government have the ability to track this and have everything on you? No. I just don't agree. I mean, there's some countries that I just don't want to mention for a variety of reasons that you really, really track all their citizens with surveillance, etc., and monitor everything that they're doing with biometric data. And that's just the wrong way. I mean, you know, we need to have our own liberties. So if a country puts on a digital currency, you know, India is talking about it, and they might go for it because they demonetized the rupee. You know, they got rid of one day they said the 1,000 rupee bill is no longer valid. Now let me explain to you what that would mean, Jim. That would be like in the United States, them saying the $100 bills are no longer valid. You have to deposit them with the Fed within 30 days with your ID card, or you'll lose them. I mean, that was pretty harsh. And I know why they did it. They did it because there were all these policemen, et cetera, that had hundreds of millions of dollars of corrupt money inside their walls, and it was the only way to get rid of it. But I really do not like this notion of governments trying to see everything everyone's doing, because one thing I don't think is fair. Two, I mean, if you go back to the history of governments, even the gun laws in the United States, why are there gun laws? I mean, yeah, guns are bad, evil, blah, blah, blah. Why are there gun laws? It's because the cops have guns, the government has guns, and people, you know, the founders set that up so people have the ability to not get taken over by their government. And I want to point out, Jim, that the first act that Hitler did when he became president of Germany was to get rid of the guns. So I'm not trying to make a reference to guns and control of money, but it's so intertwined in what we do. I mean, the whole society functions around money. If the governments absolutely control it, I mean, the governments are not always good. Sometimes they have rogue players, sometimes they're coups. It could be very, very dangerous, Jim.
I totally agree. I mean, I don't want them dabbling in it because the other side is, okay, I have my notebook here. You can't see it. It has 80 pages in it, right? But my digital notebook could have 180 pages in it or 280 pages in it. Nobody knows the actual number that's quote unquote printed. So what is it worth? See what I'm saying? Like, there's no, you know, like you can't physically count or be held accountable to $1 billion $1 bills. Which is really scary, in my opinion.
Which, by the way, I mean, to mention billion-dollar bills, Obama actually gave $4 billion of cash to the Iranians. And, you know, some are saying that it might have led to a lot of the things that are going on now in the world, Jim.
Why can't the government give me $4 billion? Or you
Me
$4 billion?
too. We should try.
Or, you know, 100,000 to a couple of us. I don't know. Yeah, something reasonable even. So what's the biggest, I mean, you're the money guy that I refer to around here. So I hear all these ads about buying gold and silver all the time. Of course, that's kind of the, you know, the hedge against inflation and all this other stuff that they claim it is, because, you know, has sort of historically been now. I know that much. But where do you see the world economy in the next, you know, 12 months going forward?
Well, let me first get on the first thing that you said, buying physical gold and silver, or gold and silver. Let me focus on silver because a lot of people are telling investors, etc., you should load up on physical silver. Silver is at $24, $25 an ounce. Physical silver coins are $35 an ounce to buy, but if you sell them for $25. So to make money on physical silver, it's a bad, bad idea. Gold, on the other hand, I mean, gold is something that I think you would want to accumulate over time. I mean, I wrote a research report recently that I think gold's going to be volatile, drop to $1,800, but that's just a little blip. I mean, I think in, you know, over many years, gold is a very important resource because now it's really the only thing that the central banks are doing to essentially justify their reserves because there's so many people, you know, concerned about what would happen if the global monetary system would blow up, if a country, let's say United States, you know, China, India, the three largest holders of gold, have a lot of gold, it will make it virtually impossible to have foreign entities do a run on their currency. Now, to your second question, or I guess your question about the state of the global economy, you know, when there's going to be an election year during a major conflict in the Middle East that's taking up about half of the US's military power, I think it's, you probably were going to end up in a recession. I mean, I don't think this inflation is going to last, which is a good thing, but I think things are going to go downhill up until the election. Consumer confidence will probably drop quite a bit. And, you know, when I say recession, I mean in the typical sense, 2 quarters of negative GDP. But yeah, I do not think we're in a good economy, and I do not think the stock market is representative of the economy. I think the stock market is up because of market positioning. And you know, I'm not saying the stock market's going to go down, but my best guess is we stay within a pretty tight range up until the election, or maybe even longer. You know, the volatility index of VIX is around 12, so that's essentially implying that right now, from here to a year out, we should only have a 12% move from the top to the bottom. I mean, it doesn't exactly say that, but one could, you know, say that it says that. So I would say that you know, I'm bearish on the economy, and it's probably not the best time to get into debt.
There's never a good time to get in debt. I mean, unless you need to. I'm not a financial advisor. I was wondering, I seen a report about price gouging. How much do you think of this current inflation is price gouging versus actual inflation?
I think most of it is price gouging because if you look at the raw commodity prices, most of them are really not up that much. I mean, I guess sugar is up and, you know, the price of cows, beef is up, but, you know, other things are generally subdued. I mean, you know, cocoa has gone up a little bit, but that's just because of supply constraints. But when you look at other things, you know, in abundance, wheat, you know, corn, soybeans, etc., there really isn't, there hasn't been much price movement. If anything, a lot of these commodities have dropped since the run-up to for Russia, Ukraine. And so, given that we really don't have much inflation on the supply side, it really appears to me that companies are raising prices, knowing that demand's going to drop a lot, so they can weather through a recession. But what will happen is people will start spending less and less once, these massive credit card bills start to face reality, because people are going into debt a lot right now in the U.S. Interest rates are high. They're not going to go down. I mean, that's just a dream that they're going down. I mean, you have a Fed chairman who says they're not going to go down, so they're not going down. I mean, for a while, until this inflation is solved. And there are other things that are important as well. The Bank of Japan is kind of fighting the Fed by keeping interest rates really low. The Bank of Japan is adding to a lot of this liquidity in the world, Jim, adding to the Bitcoin strength, the crypto strength, and also the exuberance in the stock market. So as long as the Bank of Japan is not raising rates, it's almost it doesn't really work so well that the Fed does it. The Fed will have to keep raising more and more and more to get their differential, from the Japanese central bank, make it broader, wider. So I mean, I think there's really a lot going on, Jim.
There is. I mean, there's a lot. I'll tell you this. This is kind of blew my mind because Black Friday was last Friday. We were out early, not going shopping though, but we were out. And I seen less traffic that Friday than I do on a normal morning. And I was like, ooh, this isn't what I expected. And I wonder what this means for them overall.
Well, for one thing, I'm sure it's a sad thing for the mom and pop stores again. I mean, when a company like Amazon takes over everyone's business, maybe it's efficient for the consumer, but a lot of the consumers are people who ran these businesses that Amazon took over. So, that's not so good. I mean, that's, somewhat sad news for retail in general.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough market for everybody. Okay, Germantown Runner pipes in again because he's got the better questions than I do, so I'm giving him credit. What do you think the do you think that President Biden will float a credit card forgiveness scheme to carry votes next year?
No, because it would have to get through it would have to get through Congress, and anything like that, any sort of stimulus now would just crush the dollar, and that would be really bad. So I think Biden is going to have to be very, very cautious on his fiscal policy now going into the Trump election, when Trump clearly has an edge on the perception that he's better with the economy.
He had another question. Where'd it go? Oh, he asked. Oh, hold on. Let's see if I can find it again. I don't want to paraphrase it. I want to get it right because it was a good one. Oh, he was asking about how do you feel about women in fighting?
Well, I mean, I think women in fighting is certainly a good thing. I mean, I think it's becoming a little bit dangerous when a lot of the women in fighting used to be men, and that just doesn't work, because men and women physically are born differently. So a man who becomes a woman will have an edge over the woman. But females that were born women in fighting, I think it's fine. It never really took off. The media never really pushed it very much. So I mean, you never had like this female Hulk Hogan or this female Mike Tyson, but certainly you could. I mean, women can fight. And on an interesting note, I mean, as funny as it may sound, if a guy saw two girls fighting at school, I mean, everyone stopped and watched. Certainly in my high school they did.
I think they did in my high school too. So, think that's more common than, well, than not. How about that? Got a question here from the YouTube chat. Have you seen a clone of yourself yet?
No, but a friend of mine has. He's pretty sure. Yeah, a friend of mine who's from a country in Asia recently told me that that he saw a clone of himself, and he actually had been incarcerated for a while, and he believed that they had cloned him when he was incarcerated.
I've seen people that, you know, look like people, but I've never. Wow, that's deep thinking that. Don't know what to make about that. Well, back to trying to figure out other things here. Oh, do you think China will make a move on Taiwan?
I think there is enough domestic pressure in China to probably eventually make a move. And I've also been hearing from a good source that there is a hedge that was used for erosion. And there was some evidence that there was some Chinese military building of a tunnel under this hedge. I mean, I certainly think the Chinese believe that, that Taiwan is part of China, just given the way Taiwan developed. You know, when Mao came in power, the rulers of China just fled to Taiwan, and for a while, this Republic of China, Taiwan was in the UN Security Council. They actually had a seat. So there is a long, long history. I mean, the Chinese have wanted. They haven't been happy with Taiwan ever since the Communist Revolution. I do think of eventually China would probably successfully take over Taiwan, and it historically might be more reminiscent of Hawaii. I mean, unfortunately, I mean, I know that I have some great friends who are Taiwanese, and I know many of them will be disappointed, but the Chinese have a very, very strong military, and I just do not believe that the United States will give unilateral support to Taiwan when there's too many things going on. And I mean, imagine it happening right now. I mean, the U.S. is clearly in the Middle East, and there is an agenda to back Israel, and so you have that issue. You might have an issue with Iran. You have Ukraine and Russia, and then you have China. So it's just the China Taiwanese future conflict really doesn't bring America into it, the dead center, like the Israeli Gaza conflict. I do think there's a global theme now going of isolationism, wars, etc. So it probably will continue.
So that leads to this next question. How is the, because, you know, I see this world, I don't see the worldview. I see what the US media has to say, and that's, well, I don't pay much attention to that because, as you mentioned earlier, it's not worth the paper it's printed on. Well, I don't read too much print media, but, you know, the saying. How is the United States regarded throughout Asia economically and militarily?
Fear. I mean, USA definitely has a lot more respect in Asia than it does in Europe. There is not this blatant anti-American sentiment that there is. You know, when I went to London School of Economics and they said there was something called anti-Americanism, I was like, huh? There is? I never knew. Because you just don't realize there is in America, but it's very, very big in Europe. I think in Asia in general, people look up to the United States like the military power, like the economic power, etc. And I believe that the entire Belt and Road Initiative, by China, is really to maintain its status as the second world superpower, and it seems to be doing a very good job at it. I think the United States has a very powerful reputation, but the Chinese do as well. I mean, keep in mind, I think it's like what 141 countries signed letters of intent to be part of the Belt and Road Initiative. Basically, what's happening is China's going to these countries, building these giant roads, often having relationships with the government, so they can have access to the ports. Sometimes taking over the ports. Sometimes having rights to farmland, etc., because of loans. And so China is basically developing a global network of waterways. And the reason why I'm saying this is because, throughout the world, there's clearly now the perception of two superpowers. And it's Russia, sorry, it's not Russia. I mean, it's United States and China. I mean, like, Russia is almost insignificant on the global scale right now.
So, I guess my follow-up. Well, you mentioned Europe in there. We haven't talked about Europe too much. We've been all over the Middle East and in Asia and around the United States. What's going on in Europe? Are they still there?
Europe's there. They don't work very hard as a country. They don't work, sorry, but they really don't. I mean, 35-hour work weeks in France. Europe produces the luxury items for the world, a lot of wine, a lot of food, high-end products, the Gucci's of the world, the high-end fashion. But as far as actual productivity and stuff that really affects, humanity, Europe doesn't participate much.
So I guess I got to bring it back to America because, well, it's kind of a European question, I guess, too. Twitter, excuse me, X. I'll never get used to that. I'm always posting a tweet on Twitter. Sorry. Sorry, Elon. Doesn't have the same brand recognition to me. What do you make of all of that right now?
Elon was a classmate of mine, believe it or not. Next time you go to Philadelphia, Jim, go to 40th and Pine, and that's where he lived when he was an undergraduate at Penn. He was a roommate of one of my close friends. As far as Twitter, I actually like what he's doing because, Elon is really the only person who's trying to preserve the freedom of speech. And although I disagree with some of the things that he said, and I'm actually personally offended by some of the things he said, but I respect his right to say them because Elon is right now trying to be the person who controls or gives people a voice and gives people the right to say what they want. And that's how America was built. And Elon's doing that. And as far as some of these other, I wouldn't say rumors, but the media's interpretation that Twitter is stirring global violence, I mean, that's just nonsense. I mean, there is so much hatred now in the world, Jim. It wouldn't matter if it was X Twitter or if it was just some random blog or there was no blog at all. I mean, there's just so much hatred that I don't think X really is contributing to much of it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think no matter where people congregate, there's going to be good, bad, or indifferent there. No matter if it's your site, my site, Twitter, Facebook, wherever. So,
Yeah, I mean, oh, go
oh,
ahead.
no, I was going to say, go ahead. I'm sorry. I just came to something, but it seems like you did too at the same time. So go ahead.
Well, I just think that another reason that the media is just completely bashing Twitter because it's a direct threat to the media. So, citizen journalism has always been something that conventional media has feared, and because people can deliver the news right there and then, and so things have changed. And I do believe that there must be some sort of suppression of the news agencies directly, from the White House. When you get really big, Jim, and they give you that call, please share it to everyone. Record it when they call you and tell you not to say something, because
Oh,
I want to hear
don't
what they
worry.
do.
I'm not. I hope that happens, but I'll just probably fall off the face of the earth, and nobody will know instead of getting that
I
call.
don't think so.
I'd like that call from anybody. I look forward to those things, but I also wonder. You say it's a threat. But it's kind of double-edged sword too, right? As people start to self-report, so to speak, the information could get skewed because, well, you have your biases, I have mine, Germantown Runner has his, and as we start to look at the car crashing, right? No matter what we see, we all see something different. So, is it going to muddy the waters too much to make it valued, or How's that going to work?
Well, the thing is, I don't know if you've ever watched Fox, MSNBC, and CNN at the same time, but they'll report the same story completely differently to people in the same country. And the people that watch Fox, a lot of them hate CNN. So it's already happening in the United States. I mean, the main difference between Twitter, X, and these news agencies is at least you can choose the who you listen to, etc. When the news is on, you're listening to whoever's talking.
That's for sure. And maybe if somebody from X is listening, they need to look at my account and see if I'm still shadow banned. I didn't think they, I thought they got rid of all of that, but I'm not seeing the numbers I like. So I'm just going to assume that's it.
You hear that, Elon?
Yeah. I've tweeted at him about it, but he gets hundreds of tweets per post. So, one of these days. Okay, what Germantown runner again? What is the best play to capitalize on the upcoming singularity between the merging of man and machine?
That's a good question. I mean, if you think man and machine, will integrate, you're talking about the best investment, probably, it's probably already there, Microsoft's, etc. It would benefit from it. But I think intellectually, if that happens, the entire landscape of the investment spectrum might change. And who knows what would happen? I mean, I think if we get into this situation, the things might get well beyond investing.
Do you think that, because you got the traditional values, right? You mentioned Microsoft, and I'm thinking, will they be willing to adapt fast enough that somebody like, I don't know, I'm not sure Google is fast enough to adapt either, and maybe some new entity enters the picture that we haven't come to yet, or do you think they're going to be willing to move fast enough to get there?
Microsoft has what, $3 trillion. I mean, that's bigger than most governments. So, I mean, essentially now, Microsoft, Google, Facebook, I mean, they're like governments, where they have a massive influence over humans. I mean, I remember back in the day, there was actually speculation when they were bringing Zuckerberg to Congress that Facebook would actually try to become a sovereign state, like buy, an island and become a country. So given the massive power of these things, it's going to be hard at this point to take away anything AI from Microsoft. If anything, if you want an interesting play, I would say buy Microsoft and short Meta, because I don't believe that Facebook is going to actually be able to compete. I mean, as far as I've been told, you have three just really awesome tech units. So one is by Apple, one is by Tesla, and one is by OpenAI. I mean, this is where like the top engineers, like the upper 1% of 1% goes apparently. And I mean, apparently the guys at Tesla are good enough to build flying cars, but I guess there's not. So, when you have so much money and brain power, at a few organizations, it's likely that the stuff will stay there. Also, there'll eventually be a bunch of security things. I mean, if you saw what's going on with the United States and Huawei, and the United States and the types of NVIDIA chips they're willing to send to China, etc., there's obviously a lot of intergovernmental fear that this other government, shouldn't be able to top us. But if you look at the past, the Japanese and the Chinese have become incredibly technologically advanced, and so I wouldn't be surprised if there are a lot of AI avenues that open from these countries. So I think maybe to answer the question better, the best pure play now would probably take a basket of AI stocks from China and Japan and just hold all of them because the U.S. is somewhat, I wouldn't say done, but all these people are trying to catch up. Facebook, even Musk has his own chat box, but it's going to be hard because ChatGPT is really, really beyond what people have anticipated. It's pretty intelligent. Now, it gets a lot of things wrong. I mean, if you ask it, to calculate, something, very, very complicated, how many atomic particles a nuclear bomb would break up to, it won't be able to do that. But it's really going in the right direction.
Well, I mean, I'm surprised by it. Of course, it called me a comedian, so I'm not sure about that. But Oh, I just got, well, shown a news story here that Virgin Atlantic, powered by cooking oil, makes its maiden journey from London to New York today. I mean, there's a lot of green energy being distributed. How is green energy thought of in over that way?
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of competing technologies with green energy. I mean, I don't think the average, consumer really cares so much. I think more now it's on the governmental level, but certainly there's, I mean, you have the solar power, et cetera. You have the natural gas people, and then you have the nuclear people, and they're all trying to find their place. But I get the feeling that a lot of these nuclear projects, these saltwater mines, et cetera, probably will never happen. And it appears that the world is going completely solar. Some things, your silver still being at 24, what we mentioned earlier, knowing that you need, I think, 14 ounces of silver or something, might not be that much, but a lot of silver per solar panel. So that's somewhat disappointed. I mean, you can look at silver, the price of silver, as a gauge to what's going on with with solar. But certainly the entire notion of changing the way the world uses energy will be one of the main themes of corporate America. And it's not so good, not corporate America, corporate world. And it's almost like, a tariff on these companies, because they have to spend crazy amounts of money to mimic the technologies that the governments want them to use.
So we have to ask about the traditional energy. You got your oil out there. And I mean, the Middle East is volatile. Is that going to be going up? I'm assuming it's going to be going up. I can't even ask if it's going to go down because I don't see a path for it to go down.
Well, so oil popped up. It was around $80 a barrel, recently up until October, and then the war, Israel Gaza, began. It ran up to $88, and then it sold off recently when there was not any sort of major reaction from the Iranians. I mean, oil really is the main key commodity, because everything that we do revolves around oil. I mean, even this call, one way or another, on both ends, is being powered by oil. And so that the price of oil affects the cost of production of everything. So that is definitely the main catalyst of inflation. I mean, it probably will go up long term. The governments have a lot of tools. Biden has strategic oil reserves that he could flood the market with. And then you have this issue of tariffs on Russia. So the tariffs on Russia make it so that Russia cannot sell oil for, I believe it's above $70 a barrel. And so that kind of leaves oil around $70 a barrel, because the markets are somewhat efficient in that way. Also, people don't follow the rules. So if oil is $90 a barrel, but 70 in Russia, then there's going to be all these oil tanks going around the world doing dodgy things, switching the oil in the middle of international waters, just to get the $70 oil from Russia to the rest of the world. So I think for now it's pretty muted, as long as Russia's going on for a while, and it doesn't look like that's going to end anytime soon. Russia's not going to surrender for sure, or stop.
Just for those people wondering what he means that, this show happens because of oil. Everything I'm looking at in my studio right now, sans a few pieces of some sort of cheap metal, is plastic. or has some plastic components in it. So, which is a byproduct of refined oil.
Sure.
Down the line. So, I don't think people, you know, but this still blows my mind that, you know, we could grow enough hemp to replace most plastics and, you know, it'd be biodegradable and all this other stuff. But, you know, there's still such a stigma around it that.
Sure. And these oil companies are so powerful and the lobbying dollars are so big. I mean, you know, oil is one of the giant industries. And so it's really hard. Big pharma, you know, big energy, et cetera. They have a lot of political influence in the U.S. and Europe.
You know, big money, big, you know, anyways, big money talks. I don't know what it says because it never comes my direction, but it definitely talks. The Treasury has experienced its worst rout of government bonds since the U.S. Civil War. Wow. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, a civil war in the sense of the Civil War. Certainly
yeah, the Civil
happen,
War. Since the Civil War.
I mean, a civil war, I mean, there sort of is already, but and people are starting to hate each other. They just don't, they stop shooting. I mean, the difference between the left and the right now is just, you know, somewhat, probably the most extreme that I've ever seen it. And the, you know, the activities of the people that call themselves the progressives, the far left, are pretty, you know, in your face now as well. So, yeah, I mean, it definitely, I mean, I don't think there'll be a civil war per se, but there is a massive amount of hatred and division in the U.S., and I think things are not going to get any better. I mean, I think the 2024 election will be worse than the 2016 election as far as, you know, as far as hatred goes in the United States, unfortunately.
How are we going to get out of this cycle of hatred?
It's not so easy, just given the history of the United States, the demographics of the United States, you know, embedded racism. But, you know, probably one could hope that this new generation, these younger people who are just seeing all this stuff for the first time, dislike it so much. The people on the college campuses, you know, maybe they change the paradigm in the future. So, you know, so there's less. It's just, you know, it's somewhat complicated when you have this melting pot of lots of minorities and, you know, you're in a situation where a lot of the minorities don't like each other or don't like the majority. And, you know, it's, and then you have some militant organizations that certainly try to stir things up. You know, and there's a lot of violence as well. So, I mean, there are some organizations like Antifa that would love a civil war. So, I mean, but I mean, there is still the United States is a very powerful way to actually prevent a civil war. So it's not like, you know, an African country that could suddenly have a coup in a civil war. But in the sense that there'll be a lot of hatred and violence, yeah, I expect that to continue, Jim.
So we've got a few minutes left. I know you prepared this morning. Did you prepare anything that we haven't talked about?
Well, I think a lot, and I'm pretty I'm keeping in touch with the news. I mean, we didn't discuss the war at all. What's your feeling about the war that's going on now in Gaza, Jim?
Well, it's a horrible humanitarian crisis. I think it could have been. There has to be a solution besides blowing each other up or blowing up hospitals or schools or, you know. I just don't like it.
Yeah, I don't like it either. I don't think anybody does.
And the worst part is, like, I can't sit here, I don't think you could either, and say, well, this is solution X, this point, right to the whiteboard, X, Y, Z, and everybody be happy. But that's part of life, right? If you're not happy about X and I'm not happy about Y, well, we walk away both unhappy. And I don't know if that kind of agreement could be made long term or even short term.
Certainly not short term. I mean, maybe long term. I mean, the current conflict, that's going on has been going on for so long that if you pick up a Herald Tribune, let's say from the 1950s, you might get confused with the headlines that it happened yesterday. So, I mean, that's just talking about the issues in the Middle East. But right now, with all the conflicts at the same time, it's particularly disturbing. And then if you look at what's going on with the political landscape, many of the governments are shifting to very anti-immigration policies, in particular in Europe and Argentina, et cetera, Poland. So a lot of these governments are being elected that are somewhat racist governments. And I think that's, I mean, that was going on ever since Brexit. There has just been this theme that's continuing where people want to be isolationary. They want to get rid of immigration. And I believe the political landscape is stirring a lot of the actual, human landscape.
Yeah, so like I said, we're running out of time here, so I want to give you a chance. I know you're not a big promoter of self-interest, but go ahead and give me something at least.
Yeah, sure. So, if any of you have any good opportunities in the frontier markets, if you're either looking for capital or you know of, different startups that could benefit the world, make the world a better place, perhaps in AI, perhaps in digital money, perhaps in infrastructure. Look me up. I have a new Facebook page up, Hypothesis Capital. You can find it from www.hypothesis.net, and I just started it like a week ago. And so, I'm looking for opportunities to help make developing countries better. And if any of you out there want to be my strategic partner, look me up and let's make something happen.
Well, I think you've made a strong case of knowledge tonight. Okay, so last question. This is the toughest question of the interview. I got news for you. You've been around a long time, but you ain't seen anything like this. You ready?
Yep.
What's your favorite breakfast?
That's a good one. I guess vegetable soup.
Well, folks, that's another new
In
one.
Asia, they have all these like soups and donuts on the street. You go to these markets, and they're really good. It makes your, when you drink soup in the morning, your whole body feels warm. I know we don't do it much in the States, but it's pretty appealing after a while.
As I say, I don't think I've ever had soup for breakfast, but tomorrow's a new day,
Come and
so.
visit me, Jim. I will give you the best soup for breakfast you ever had.
Yeah. One of these days, one of these days, somebody's gonna write that check for $100,000 to me, and I'll be right over after I pay some
Absolutely.
debt
Well,
off.
you're worth a lot more than that, Jim. A lot more.
Well, thank you, sir. So I'm gonna play the outro music and hang out for just a second because I have a question for you that isn't for public consumption. So, hang on.
Sure.
It's the Mallard Report. Yeah, the Mallard Report.
Hey, I want to thank you for joining us. It's been a good show tonight. I hope you enjoyed it. Take a few moments, subscribe, share, all the fun stuff. You know how to do it. I don't have to tell you. Just be ready for next week. It'll be sooner than you think.
I'm a grown-up.
Me too.
Yep, me too. But you know, these days, being a grown-up can really suck.
Luckily, we're grown-ups who grew up in the coolest generation.
We had video arcades.
And also some of the best TV and movies ever made.
We lived the origin of awesome consumer electronics. The list goes on and on.
Yep, Generation X.
Exactly.
And we're Gen X grown-up.
Every week, the Gen X grown-up podcast explores media, tech, toys, games, and more from both yesterday and today.
Through the eyes of Generation Xers who absolutely love that stuff. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or find us on our website, GenXGrownUp.com. Life sucks as a grown-up. All right, I think that was good enough.
I hope so, man. I'm tired.
Who listens to a promo on a podcast and then goes and listens to a different podcast?
Right. I've never done it. No, right.